So technology use isn't something that needs to be blocked off as something completely different to other things. If you think a child reading, you know, on an e-book is just as valuable as a child reading a traditional book. If we're talking about literacy skills, reading skills, then there's no difference between them. So technology use doesn't need to be sectioned off because it can be threaded throughout our day. Just as many adults, technology use is threaded throughout our day as well.
Welcome to the Digital Mindfulness Show. I'm your host, Lawrence Ampofo, and today we're here with Dr. Joanne Orlando, an expert on children's use of technology, particularly the teaching, learning, and social effects of children's uses of technology. In addition to her academic work, Joanne regularly works with the media, government, and corporations to provide expert advice on children's relationships to technology. In this show, we're going to talk about the various ways children and adults relate to themselves and to technology. You should listen to this episode if you want to understand the perfect amount of screen time for your child and also how to introduce the right technologies to our children. But first of all, welcome to Digital Mindfulness. We bring together the best teachers and thought leaders to teach you how to be your best self in an age of digital distraction and information overload, both at work and in your personal lives. If you're new to our show, then the best place to find out more about us is to visit digitalmindfulness.net/start, which has a collection of some required listening podcasts, where we discuss everything from becoming more focused in a distracted world to habit building, overcoming digital distraction, cyberbullying, internet addiction, online influence, and much more. Okay, enjoy the show with Dr. Joanne Orlando. So Joanne, welcome to Digital Mindfulness, and thanks so much for being here with us today. I'm really looking forward to finding out more about this whole space of children and technology and your opinions on this. So welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
So Joanne, I wonder if we can start with you telling the audience a little bit more about yourself and about your background in terms of how you got to be working in this space of technology and children in the first place.
Okay, well, I'm based in Sydney in Australia, and my work in university here is around education and children. And previous to my work in academia, I was working in the media as a writer and advisor there. And as I moved into my academic work, you know, the idea of children and their well-being is, you know, the utmost at the fore of the what I'm trying to do, trying to ensure that our world is a great place for children and that the adults who take care of children, so parents, educators, government, you know, industry, all those people who make decisions on behalf of children are doing it in an informed way that actually supports the well-being of children. So when it came to technology, just my observation of what was available in terms of the information that people can use to make decisions, what I was seeing was a lot of marketing around technology. You know, you should use this device and use this app, those kinds of things. And in addition to that, there was also a lot of headlines and around technology and its the negative effects on children, that children can get addicted, that all the online sort of communication that they can get via adults who have, you know, darker ideas in mind, and those kinds of really negative connotations around children and technology. So as a parent or as an educator or any kind of policymaker, there actually just wasn't a lot of really good, substantiated information that was real, that was backed by research, and that was really reflecting our world and our children today. So my research and my work in the media and my work in the industry is all based on research around kids and technology to give everyone a really good balanced understanding of children as users of technology, the ways that we can capitalize it so they can get all the great skills and knowledge that we want them to get for this era now, but also how we can balance that out with keeping them safe, but making sure that technology is a positive in children's life.
So Joanne, that's great. And I'm wondering now, what exactly is the difference with the way children use technology now to the way they used it in the past? In some of the shows previously, we've spoken about the way that people have had anxieties about the introduction of new technologies such as television and the radio, etc. But I'm wondering if there's actually a fundamental difference in the way that children use technology now to, say, 10 or perhaps 20 years ago.
Yeah, it absolutely is different, probably in the last 3 to 4 years. So mobile devices have been a huge game changer here. So the majority of teenagers and older children have their own mobile. And also we're finding children from a very young age are using mobile devices. So I've just completed quite a large study in families' homes where I was investigating the ways children 12 and younger use technology. A couple of things that I was finding that is very different to how it was 10 years ago is that one-year-olds now get a device for their first birthday present. It's the first birthday gift. It's like that, it's almost like getting a key when you're 21, but now you get, you know, a tablet when you're one. So that's a huge difference. Things like voice assistance on tablets and mobile phones, so you can talk into Siri or you can talk into Google Voice Command, that's being used by 2 and 3 year olds. So they're actually, I'm watching them doing it. They're calling it up, you know, saying, I want to watch this video or I want to look for this, you know, picture of dogs. And they're working the internet independently. So that's pretty big, big changes. So they've got lots of positives to them in terms of, you know, the children's literacy skills, their independence, you know, their agency and being able to be quite empowered in using technology. On the other hand, we've got, you know, 2 and 3 year olds on the internet on their own. So there's often, there's other implications for that in terms of their safety and just the sorts of content, images that they might stumble across that they wouldn't necessarily do so if they were just reading books or playing with traditional toys.
So Joanne, in the pre-interview, you and I were speaking, and one of the phrases that you used to describe this whole new area was that technology has really blindsided us, and particularly in the way that children use technology. And I'm wondering if you can just expand on that a little bit. What does it mean when you say that technology has blindsided us?
So one of the things I'm finding, so I do a lot of research in this space, so which is important because there actually isn't a lot of research in this space and we really need it. So what I'm finding is that parents are considering children as technology users. Well, parents, educators, policymakers, government, industry, they tend to consider children as technology users in a particular way. One is they tend to almost forget how prolific children are as users of technology. So young children in particular are the biggest growing user group of technology in the world. So if you look at educational apps, so on the iTunes store, 60% of those are developed for children 4 and younger. So that's just incredible. It just shows the absolute growth of this age group. But when it comes to making policies and making decisions around children as technology users, one, it's considered that children shouldn't be using technology, particularly not young children. And two, people just aren't quite sure what to do. So we are still coming to terms with the best ways of using technology to enhance children's development. But in coming to terms, there's a lagging behind. So for example, I'm finding a trend in many homes is that parents will parent their kids around all the things that they need to. For example, making sure children go to bed on time, making sure they eat healthy meals, those kinds of things. But when it comes to using technology use, they tend to just leave them to their own devices in a way. So, all right, you know, my child is on their iPad or on their device right now. They're over in the lounge room. That gives me a little bit of time to have some quiet, but I don't really need to do anything. And also, I'm not quite sure what I need to do. So often children are left to their own devices when they're using technology. So there's this gap that's happening in parenting, and there's a gap that's happening in policy development where we're not quite sure what to do about children using technology. We know we need to keep them safe, but there's a whole lot of other things we need to do as well. But it's just a bit of a arm's length sort of policy making and arm's length parenting at the moment that's happening.
It's really interesting that you say that, Joanne, because one of the most interesting things that I've been finding in this space is this growth of no technology schools. And I'm wondering whether you think that the growth of these schools is actually just a fad that people are jumping on, or whether you think it's actually important for children at a certain age to experience life without technology and to experience social development that way.
So no technology school. So that, you know, there's definitely a group in our community that thinks children need to have that time with nature and just doing those traditional things, playing on swings, playing in the park, learning in a traditional way, that technology is interrupting those kinds of, a kind of engagement with our world, that kind of sort of natural way of growing up. I think it's a few things. I think it's a fashion thing. I think it could be tied to, well, we're not really sure of how technology affects child development. So to be sure, we'll keep children away from technology. I think it's a combination of those. What's interesting, though, is when I look at different classes, lower class, middle class, and upper class, and the ways they engage with their children around technology, I find the working class or the lower class and even sections of the middle class, they see technology as this great aspirational resource. So, you know, my child is actually going to be able to get out of this sort of community and make their way into a better world if they're using technology, if they're learning the right skills, that it's going to give them the edge. On the other hand, when I look at when I work with families who are in, you know, much more wealthier, financially secure positions, they don't see technology as having the same kind of aspirational advantage for their child. So those no technology schools could also be linked to the location of those schools and whether they are in an aspirational area or in an area where they're already financially secure.
Well, Joanne, I would absolutely love it if you can just expand on that finding, because I think it's really important that kind of almost like a trend that wealthier, more affluent families think that it's more important that their children have a kind of relatively technology-free childhood, whereas parents that are kind of less affluent think that technology is much more important than that children from an early age learn how to do very important things like learning to code.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, well, I've just collected a lot of data on it, but I'm still in the throes of analyzing it. Actually, your question is perfect for making me think about it. I think that in terms of the aspirational uses of technology, so using it in the worker class or the low SES classes, they just see it as a resource with a lot of potential. They know we live in a world that's dominated by technology. You need technology skills to be able to, you know, function fully in our society now. And this one device can be used to develop those skills. So it's just something new that's come into that community, and they see a lot of potential for it, a lot of hope. Whereas on the other hand, those who are much more financially secure, I think they're just a little bit more, not as easily convinced. They know technology skills are important. There's no doubt about that. They don't want their children to miss out on any learning or any advantage that the technology will give them, but they want to be able to manage it more so it doesn't become this dominant part of their entire life 24/7. They want to keep it in check, a bit more control. Possibly because they have a lot of other resources that they can draw on in terms of their personal network, those kinds of things. Maybe it's just one of many resources and that's how they're understanding it.
One of the phrases that you use to describe children's relationship with technology is that technology can also act as a pacifier for children in much the same way as a dummy does. And I'm wondering what the effects of that would be on a child. Are there any short, medium, or long-term effects that can occur from using technology to quieten children?
It's happening quite often, actually. So it's happening when families might go out. They might go to a cafe or restaurant or somewhere want children to be quiet. So it's happening when you see children are out. You see children in cars, you know, they've got the might have the screen on the headrest, or they're just sitting in the cars, all the children with their device. It's also happening in homes. I've talked to a number of parents in my studies that say, well, we just bought the device because we want quiet time at home. They've said it simply as that. That's it. It's a babysitter. It gives us quiet time. So it's happening quite a lot. I wouldn't say it's an epidemic, but it's certainly happening a lot. So it's happening in homes, when children are out, at the doctor's surgery, all kinds of places where an adult might want a child to be quieter. And it's okay in moderation. You know, sometimes we really do need children to be quiet, and we really do need to pay attention to what's happening, and that's okay. It's when it's done over and over again, when it's the go-to strategy for parents as a way of keeping managing their children's behavior, then it becomes a bit of an issue. Because one, it sort of blocks off the child's ability to engage in their world. So if every time you go to a restaurant, you give your child your mobile or a device to play with to keep them quiet, then they're actually not going to learn the way to act in a restaurant or cafe. They're going to miss out on developing those social skills. It's also giving them, your child, a message that, hey, I don't really want to talk to you. You know, you're not important. You just stay over there. You be quiet. I just want to talk to adults. So it's giving a lot of messages around the child, their importance, when children are, you know, should be, it's almost, you know, seen and not heard. It's a little bit of that sort of old saying. And it has a lot of messages and implications for a child in terms of their identity, their relationship with their parent, if their parent is giving them the device all the time. You know, and those things build up over time. So in the longer term, if you're trying to develop a really strong, trusting relationship with your child where they feel valued by their parent, then constantly giving them something to keep quiet, you know, every day, a few times a day, is going to work against that, you know, building that relationship.
So we're talking about exposing children to technologies and whether that's a good thing or bad thing at an early age. And just through some of the guests that we've had on the show, they've spoken about some of the benefits that they can have in exposing kids to technology, such as building up certain kinds of social skills or increasing hand-eye coordination, etc. But would you say from a development standpoint that it is good to expose children to technology?
So there's a lot of great learning that can happen when a young child uses technology. So I've actually just written a research paper on it. Lots of literacy learning, so in the ability to use keywords, you know, and put that into Siri or put that into Google. You know, using keywords is a new basic skill we all need now, children and adults. And the better you can use keywords, you know, the better you are able to locate the information that you want to do. And also being able to, so for a young child using, you know, a touchscreen device, all they really need to do is to be able to tap it, to swipe it, to drag something, and to use their voice. That combination is enormously powerful for young children, because you think of what the alternative is. If they were always just using a pencil and paper as they normally do, well, that's great. They need to learn those sort of skills. Of course they do. But when they can be a bit of a struggle for them, because they're still developing those skills. They're still developing those fine motor skills. On the other hand, if they have sometimes when they're able to use a touchscreen device, it makes it much more physically easy for them to work with an idea. So instead of having to try to draw something, they can just type or swipe on something. It gives them a chance to almost put their physical development on the back burner and just really work with the idea. So it's about quality uses of technology. It's not just putting them on any old game and, you know, play with that. It's about identifying apps or ways of using technology that are really creative, that are problem solving, children can work on independently, they can work on with an adult, they can work on with other children. So it's a selective, good quality uses of technology, allows a deeper investigation of an idea for a child, and that's a wonderful opportunity for a young child. They still need time to draw and learn all those things as well, but it's another thing, another way that children can learn.
I really like a lot that idea that there is a selective use of technology, that there are specific technologies that you can use with children to help them fulfill certain tasks. And we've had guests on the show that have talked about ranking technologies in almost like a kind of nutritional scale, as it were. And I'm just wondering what you think of that, whether there are, in your opinion, there are actually good technologies that that parents can be using now with their kids to help them develop, on whether there are specifically bad ones.
So technology use isn't something that needs to be blocked off as something completely different to other things. If you think a child reading, you know, on an ebook is just as valuable as a child reading a traditional book. If we're talking about literacy skills, reading skills, then there's no difference between them. So technology use doesn't need to be sectioned off, because it can be threaded throughout our day. Just as many adults, technology use is threaded throughout our day as well. But I do agree that, yes, there are good quality uses of technology. Creative uses are good. Problem solving. If you're doing something enjoyable with your parent on a device, that's also good. It might just be playing a game, but if you're sharing an interest and you're spending one-on-one with your parent, well, that's fantastic. You know, you could also be spending one-on-one going shopping or something. It doesn't matter. The device isn't the important thing there. It's the one-on-one that's important. But I think we need to, yes, make sure that children do have balance. They do have good quality uses of technology, but they also have lots of time to talk to people, you know, face-to-face, go and play with their friends outside, those kinds of things as well. That's really important too.
One of the things I know that parents have a lot of trouble with is just exactly how much time their children should be spending with screens. And I'm wondering, in your opinion, what would you say is the right amount of time that children should be spending online, or rather with screens?
Well, new screen time guidelines came out just a few weeks ago, actually, so by the American Association of Pediatricians. And they've actually taken away how much time, a maximum amount of time, children should spend on a device. So previously they said children who were 5 to 18 should spend a maximum of 2 hours per day on a device. People are finding that so difficult, because now kids use it for school and just, you know, texting their parent on the way home from school and, you know, all those kinds of things that children are involved in. So the association has said, all right, parents, it's up to you now. Every family is different. You work out what works best for your child, your family. So that is a bit of a tough call for parents. You know, they're just not quite sure. It is that million-dollar question, you know, how long should a child spend on a device? I think we need to think of it in a few different ways. One, every day is a bit different. So weekdays, okay, we know we've got the school routine and or the preschool routine, that kind of thing. So there's always a need to go to bed a bit earlier. They're a bit more sort of routine to those days. And then we have the weekend, which is slightly different. So I think we need to section it off into those two kinds of times, or vacation time. And then for children, just making sure that, one, they do get time to play their favourite game or talk to their friend on Skype, that kind of thing. They do get time to enjoy using their device. They also have the time to do their homework if they need to do that via technology, that as well. Homework first, of course, but doesn't always work that neatly. And then they do get time to be off their device and just talk with the family or talk with whoever is at home. But I think that parents also need to keep an eye on their own technology use. So when I talk to children, they complain, you know, I'm talking to mum and then, you know, she'll just check her Facebook status while I'm talking to her, or I'm talking to mum and, you know, she just says, quiet, I have to do this email, or I just have to send this text. So it's not just keeping a check on how long children spend on their device, but it's how long adults spend on their device at home as well, and when they're talking to children. Because if you are constantly cutting off your conversation with your child, or with anyone else to be on your device, then, you know, you need to really reflect on yourself as a technology user as well.
Yeah, you mentioned it very briefly, but I wonder if you can just go into a little bit more detail now about the effect that actually has when you switch attention from your child to your device or to that very quick thing that you're doing. Like you were saying, it doesn't take very long to send a text or look at your status update or whatever, but what effect does that really have on the child when you do that?
Well, that's a good question, though, and we've all done it. You know, I've got three children myself, so yeah, we've all done it, but it's how often you do it and how often you'd give the message to your child that my device, my text, my email, my Facebook status is more important than talking to you. Now, we still live in a real world, so we still want to check our texts and things like that, but it's just to be mindful that are you constantly interrupting a conversation with your child to be on your device? It's that interruption. You know, I think that's where the draw card is, or the boundary is. It's okay to do these kinds of things at home, but if you're constantly just breaking a conversation or breaking time with your child to go onto your device, then that's giving your child the message that your technology is more important than they are. And if it's constantly happening, well, that message is constantly being reinforced to your child.
So, Joanne, I'm wondering what you think that in this era of hyperconnectivity and digital distraction, what are the most important human traits and how do we cultivate those?
Yeah, I think one is communication and relationship building is at the heart of it. You know, we're social beings. We need that. So that's important on a number of levels now in the digital age. So we need the face-to-face. We need to be with people. That sort of feeds us, doesn't it? You know, we really need that as people. But also, you know, we can get quite satisfying relationships and effective forms of communication via technology as well. That just extends our ability to be social beings. It extends the friendships we can form. It extends the ways we can communicate. Excuse me. So I think being able to have the opportunity to be involved in both face-to-face communication relationships as well as online, and they can of course foster and work with each other. I think another really important thing that we keep hearing about is privacy, particularly in relation to technology. So the right to privacy is one of the rights of children. One of the international rights of children is the right to privacy. And as adults, we are constantly trying to protect children's privacy in this technological world. So there's lots of e-safety things going on and a lot of talk about how to, you know, manage the settings on our devices so we can ensure that our children are safe online. That's really important. But I think we also need to understand that privacy is a dynamic concept. So the way we think of privacy now is quite different to the way we thought of it in the 1900s. You know, you just have to look at the way we dress. We, as you know, however old we are, 30, 40, 50 year olds, we think of privacy different to how a 16 year old thinks of privacy or how a 12 year old thinks of privacy. So when we're considering children's privacy, when we're talking with them and when we're trying to manage it, it's important that we get a sense of how children or young people are understanding privacy as well, so that the decisions we make, the policies we make, the practices we make are going to work for the people that we're actually making it for, the young people. So when I talk to teenagers about privacy, they don't say they don't care about privacy. It's far from it. They just have a slightly different understanding. So some things they put up online, you know, that a six-year-old would never put up online, you know, it's just part of the ways that generation engages with the world. So we just need to consider that idea that privacy is an ever-changing idea, and policies need to reflect that as well. Safety is different, but privacy is another matter.
One of the things that we spoke about briefly in the pre-interview was this whole idea of this post-truth environment that we're living in. And I'd just like to know your thoughts on this, particularly for parents who may be wondering, in this age where I can't tell what's true and what's not online, then how on earth can I teach my children that?
I agree. It's a tough one, isn't it? Knowing what's real and not real online is, it's so hard now. You know, we have, there's a study that was recently done at, I think it was Stanford University, where they were talking to children and trying to work out if children could distinguish it between advertising and news online. So the children were about 10 through to 13 or 14, that kind of age group. And they knew what advertising was, and they knew what a news story was, but they didn't know that a sponsored link was actually advertising. They thought sponsored links were news. And probably many adults do too. You have to find that where it says sponsored link to be actually to able to identify what it was. So that blurring of information, entertainment, advertising, you know, it's really dominating the internet now. We see a lot of news come through on Facebook. You don't see it on the news when you watch it on TV. It's a different kind of news or information giving on Facebook, and a lot of it is has advertising or marketing, you know, that it is underneath it, that sits behind it, which a lot of us don't realize. But still, it becomes part of our world, and we sort of forget about the reasoning behind it. So I think learning critical literacy for children and adults is really important. The idea of understanding why content is up online in the first place. What is the purpose of that content? Is it to inform? Is it to advertise? Is it just to share ideas? Is it to communicate with people? We need to have an understanding of this. It's something that's happening in schools, but we're all still coming to terms with it as adults as well. And I think, you know, technology is an interesting thing. It's not necessarily something that we as adults know everything about and we impart the knowledge to our children, because they know so much. Sometimes they know more than us. So I think that idea of just bringing this idea of critical literacy and talking about news and advertising and things you've seen online out in the open and just in the family conversation, it will help parents and children develop an understanding. But you can do it together. You know, you can learn from each other. It doesn't have to be the parents knowing everything, because that's so hard with technology. I think we put too much stress on ourselves that we need to know everything about it. It's more of a leveler in terms of generations. We each generation can learn from each other.
So Joanne, where can people find out more about you and your work and connect with you?
Okay, so I've got a website, joanneorlando.com. So I'm available to be contacted by that website. Plus I put a lot of my media work and a lot of my research that all goes up on there. So it's a good way just to get in touch with my kind of ideas, but you can contact me as well there.
Great. Well, Joanne, thanks so much for being a part of the show today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Lawrence.